Even as a little boy being raised in rural Mississippi, I loved television. Back then, there were only three networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC. And in my hometown of Amory, Mississippi, we didn't even get ABC until the late 60s. Amory was founded in 1887 as Mississippi's first planned community, a town used as the halfway depot for the Frisco Railroad between Memphis and Birmingham. By 1900, the population was about 7,000 people, and it's never changed. I often compare it to Andy Griffith's Mayberry. In 1964, when I was 9 years old, Bonanza came on at 8 p.m. on Sunday nights. It was the number one show on television, my absolute favorite, and I watched it every week. That same year, Hello Dolly and Carol Channing won Tony Awards. My Fair Lady walked away with the Oscar for Best Picture. The Girl from Ipanema won the Grammy for Record of the Year. The Beatles were named Best New Musical Artists. And Donna Axum was crowned Miss America. I had a major crush on Julie Andrews, who won the Academy Award for playing Mary Poppins that year. I knew all of this and more. I was a walking statistician of entertainment industry facts, and I shared them with anyone who would listen. I read TV Guide every week, as well as Photoplay magazine, to get the latest information about the world of entertainment and Hollywood, where I dreamed of working one day. I also paid attention to the commercials, and one in particular because they aired it during all my favorite shows, Procter & Gamble's ad for one of its biggest products, Cheer Laundry Detergent. More than just proclaiming the detergent's amazing cleansing power, quite dull for a 9-year-old, the ad featured a wonderful-looking character called the Cheer Man, walking through a neighborhood ringing doorbells. He wore a big hat with a swirling Cheer logo. His uniform was yellow and blue with orange stripes. When a housewife answered her door, he would ask, "Do you use Cheer?" Her face always lit up in a smile. "Well, yes, I do," she'd say, and show him her box of Cheer. He'd smile and give her a check for $10. At the end, the announcer would say, "The Cheer Man is coming to your town." The commercial promised that if he knocked on your door and you could show him a box of Cheer, or what they called a reasonable facsimile, basically Cheer written on a piece of paper, he would give you $10, which was an incredible amount of money for a kid in 1964. The first time I saw that commercial, I was not only absolutely convinced that the Cheer Man would come to Mississippi, but I was positive that he would come to Amory, and more important, to 405 South 3rd Street, my home. When I told my mother that the Cheer Man was coming, she never once pointed out how impossible that would be or how far we lived from the places where those commercials were made. Instead, she told me it was a beautiful dream, and she helped me prepare for his arrival. Her support made me even more confident. My mother used Cheer, but I wasn't content just to have the actual box or the word Cheer written on a scrap of paper when the Cheer Man came. No. Instead, I went to the local print shop with my 50 cents in weekly allowance, plus some money from running errands, and bought colored paints, glitter, and these designer rocks that people use to give texture to their artwork by gluing them on the paper and painting over them. I think my mother must have given me some money, too, because it cost several dollars. One Saturday afternoon, I made a giant sign with the Cheer logo, maybe 3 feet by 4 feet, and hung it on my bedroom wall. Then I waited. Meanwhile, word of what I'd done spread across Amory, no doubt because I'd told the kids at school and anyone else who would listen that the Cheer Man was coming to my house. I'm sure most of them thought I was nuts. Still, I didn't care. My mother encouraged me to be a dreamer, and I believed anything was possible. My insistence that the Cheer Man would come to our house soon became the joke of all jokes to my dad and his golfing buddies. When my parents had people over for cocktails or dinner, my father, Sam Jr., my grandfather was Sam Sr. and I was Sammy, would say, "Sammy, go bring out your Cheer sign." I did, even though I knew how patronizing the laughter was. But I would look them straight in the eye, and with every ounce of confidence I had, I would simply say, "He's coming." My dad was a charismatic, handsome, self-made man who everyone wanted as a friend. He was close to the high school football and basketball coaches and often hosted a gaggle of men at the house where they'd drink beer and watch sports on TV. Although I knew he loved us, my father was not a nurturer. His way of motivating his sons, me and my younger brothers Jamie and Billy, was to call attention to our frailties. Though he would do it in a lighthearted, funny way, I never liked it. My mother reacted differently. She believed in me and in whatever I believed in. She had taught me to always have faith in myself, no matter what. At the time, I was too young for her to explain the reasons why faith couldn't hurt, only help. And I didn't ask deep questions, so it was her strong example that I took to heart. When my father snorted in disbelief at what he thought was my fanciful imagination, she would say, "If he believes the cheer man's coming, then of course he's coming."